I'm Lorcan Malone, Chief Executive of the Analytics Institute of Ireland, and you're very welcome to our podcast series, Data Leaders. In these podcasts, I chat with some of the most important and influential people in the data analytics area in Ireland, and I try to find out a little bit about the people and personalities behind the careers. I also want to explore their philosophy in relation to data and analytics in general, and also find out a little bit about where they think the industry is going in the future. I hope you enjoy this series of interviews, and if you do, please subscribe below. Thank you. So hello, everybody, and welcome to our podcast today. My name is Lorcan Malone, Chief Executive of the Analytics Institute, and I am joined today by Mikhail Boril. Mikhail is the Global Chief Technology Officer with an organization called Sigeti. Sigeti, many of you will know, is part of Capgemini, which is a huge organization across the world with over 350,000 staff, so almost a country in their own right. Mikhail, amazing to realize that you have been 40 years in this role. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about Sigeti first and what you do, and maybe a little bit also about, you know, looking at 40 years in an organization, in a technology organization, be interesting to understand your perspective about how life has changed in that time.
Okay.
So maybe we start with Sigeti.
Yeah, okay. But please stop reminding me of the 40 years because I feel old already. No, enough.
But, I'm with you. Don't worry. We're all in the same boat.
Yeah. And I mean, it doesn't feel like 40 years, which is a good sign. So. Yeah. I would say I've always worked with Sogeti and its predecessors. Sogeti is a company of that brings together, I think, people that are passionate about technology. That's really what we do. And of course, we work together with these people to solve challenges for our clients. We are in 14 countries, mainly in Europe, in the US, and of course we have a big contingent of colleagues in India, and we are really technology specialists in software engineering, in quality engineering and testing, in data engineering, and more now, of course, today in AI. We give the full spectrum of from advisory services to doing projects, and we have been doing that for quite some time. And my role within that organization is to try to look a little bit beyond the horizon of what will be hot and what will be happening in about 2 to 3 years from now. So if you look at that, you could look at the now, the new, and the next. I'm primarily interested in the next. Now, in addition to that, I try to make our clients dream about the possibilities of information technology and how it will solve many of the of organizations and the world's problems, but also what they need to do and how they work on it and how they can progress, how to get value out of technology. I'm always more interested in not what you put into technology, but what you get out of it. So that's a short introduction how I look at it. Now, in the last 15 years or so in the role of CTO, what's interesting about the role of CTO, I think it sounds very important, but it doesn't really say what you actually do. So it doesn't create too much expectations. As opposed to CIO or CEO or CFO, it's very clear what their responsibility is. What I see as my responsibility is tell our clients things that they don't know yet, that they don't realize yet, come with something new every time I talk with them. And I spend a lot of time with our clients. So about 50% of my time, I try to be with clients, to visit them, to do all kinds of presentations, seminars, workshops, etc. 25% of my time, I do research. At heart, I'm a researcher. So we do a lot of publications, reports, books, etc. And the last 25% I spent within our own corporate environment driving innovation and driving the next.
Very good. And why would a client organization use you guys rather than somebody else or do it themselves? I mean, what value do you feel your organization brings to the table?
Well, first, we have very good people. In the end, that's the most important thing that we have. So we have our all of our people are certified engineers. They follow and they progress through the different certification standards that there are. And then the second thing I think that we pride ourselves on is that we are very fast to the new.
Okay.
So when many of our competitors are still discussing what the impact of technology is and how should they respond, we are already doing it. So we are very much experimented oriented.
Yeah. Okay.
Like to do things more than we like to talk about things. And I think that's really what I've learned in the 37 years or so that I'm with this organization. That's really what sets us apart.
Okay.
Pragmatic, fast to the new, and then easy to do business with. That's also something that we hear from our clients.
Okay.
And well, surprisingly, those simple things actually are very much appreciated by our clients. And I would say that all of our competitors should be easy to do business with as well, but sometimes they're not that easy, Joe.
Okay. And in terms of, like, we're living in very interesting times now, I feel, you know, in the 10 years since we established the Analytics Institute, we've gone from big data being what everybody talked about to kind of AI. There was a time we were talking all about machine learning. Now it's AI, and not only AI, but generative AI. And there always seems to me to be a new fashion just coming down the road. And I think sometimes the people who bear responsibility in organization for putting solutions together, I think sometimes they struggle with this pace of change and also trying to understand what's real and what's hype generated by Gartner or by some of the big vendor organizations or the big advisory firms. How do you advise a CTO in an organization that you're advising? How do you help them to kind of negotiate what's real from what's hype, and how do they manage to actually deliver real value for their organization rather than maybe a technology investment that looks good on paper, but it's not actually delivering anything to the bottom line? Sorry, it's a big question again, but I think it's an important one.
Yeah. Now, so a big question, short answer is experiment.
Right.
Experiment. Okay. Just try things, but then make sure that you define the experiment very well so that it shouldn't be a proof of concept where you just prove that the technology is working. But really what you need to do is prove the business case, prove the business value.
Yeah.
So you have to have a disciplined way of constantly experimenting. Do not try to predict, because this world is inherently unpredictable. Most people didn't see the ChatGPT revolution coming. At all. Even people that get paid to make predictions didn't see it coming. And so forget about predicting, just try. That's one thing. The other thing is observe. Look very closely what others are doing, what's happening in the world. I love this quote from William Gibson that I often use in my presentation, who says, it's this famous science fiction writer, right? And he says, the future is already here. It's only not evenly distributed. And so what I believe is that next to experimentation, companies need to look at these pockets where you see interesting innovations happening, and then just try to imagine what it would mean if it would mature enough and it would basically get mainstream acceptance. And then look back at your organization, what would it mean for my processes if I would have Gen AI in all of my business processes that I have? What would they look like? How would the way that I interact with my customers, how would it change? How would the way change that I answer questions and do search within my organization? How would the way that I build my whole IT stack, how would it change if we would put more autonomous generative elements into it? That's one thing. The other thing that I would say to a CIO is, listen, this industry needs hypes. We just need hypes to attract the investment, to develop ideas into reality. We need these hypes, and that's just how our industry works. We always go from hyping things, then we start to invest in, we start experimenting, we start to do the R&D, and then most of the time something comes out of it, and sometimes it takes longer, it will mature over time. So that's what I would say.
I think that's a great piece of advice. So taking not the very, very large organizations, Mikhail, but say the medium, small to medium sized companies, which would be maybe the majority of our membership organizations. So you're saying to them, maybe start with a small piece of AI somewhere, experiment with that, see what you can manage, see if you can get results that actually deliver some value, and then roll out from there.
Yeah, but and then what I find extremely important in those experiments, take the business people with you. So make those business people that understand your business processes and take them into the experiments, because otherwise, if you leave it up to technicians, then they will have a fantastic time experimenting, playing around with the technology, but then it's not going to provide any business value. So define experiments very well, explain what the use case is, what the value is that you're going to create with the experiment, and then keep the business people in the loop. I think that's really where you elevate a proof of concept into a real business prototype.
So I agree. I think you have to, from what I see, you have to get the business involved at an early stage and get them excited about what you're doing.
Absolutely. And now, of course, in many organizations, it's already quite hard to draw a straight line between business and where business ends and where technology or IT starts. They already, many companies already have an agile way of working, where business people are already integral part of the development teams. So that would be, and I see that happening as well, right? So but be careful that you don't leave it to the technicians themselves, because they're interested in technology for technology's sake.
What are the when you're dealing with these large organizations, Miguel, what are the biggest barriers to success in terms of, you know, creating value from technology, from investing in technology? What are the barriers that that you see organizations facing?
Well, large organizations that have been around, the main challenge is, of course, their existing legacy systems that's holding them back. In highly regulated industry, it's regulations, it's risk averseness.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that would be the biggest prohibitors.
And what about culture? And you know, I come across quite a lot of organizations who struggle to convince their senior management team. They might pay lip service to data and being data driven, but reality still stick to old methodologies that have been proven over years. You know, the insurance industry is a very typical example, where you would think it's a very numerate business, but they still, quite a lot of organizations are quite behind in terms of their adoption of data driven technologies.
Well, let me think of it. So one way how we look at it is that successful projects, they are not only dependent on technology, they're also dependent on the leadership capability. And leadership, of course, is a big part of culture. And so if the leadership doesn't instill or adopt a data-driven culture, then you can provide any technology you want, but then you won't get the business results, right? And so what's a data-driven culture? I think it's a very clear understanding about what organizations don't know and what is unknowable. Now, things that are unknowable don't spend a lot of time because they're unknowable.
Yeah.
But many things that you don't know are actually knowable, if that makes sense. And leadership should drive a culture where you say, okay, I'm not accepting the answer I don't know, if you can find out. So you have to have this burning fire that if you don't know something, you want to find out. That's curiosity. Often large organizations, they know they have the data, but still they don't know.
Yeah.
And so that's, of course, the biggest thing, I think, that leadership should install. If you can't produce the data to support whatever you're proposing, whatever, then go and find the data.
Yeah, it's interesting. The other thing that we're coming across a lot lately, Mikhail, is data literacy for everybody in an organization. You know, so this whole idea of data democratization, everybody having access and everybody having some skills to be able to utilize data in their jobs. How do you feel about that? Is that something that Sujeti has come across? And is it something that you think is going to be more and more seen in organizations?
Well, yes. So, and of course, the tools are getting better and better and better. And now we are getting all these co-pilots that are going to help you.
Yes.
But in the end, again, to go back to this cultural leadership axis, you can lead a horse to the water, but you cannot make it drink, right? So you have to create the thirst.
Yeah.
You have to create the burning platform, whatever you want to call it. Now, the other thing, I want to come back to one of the questions you asked earlier, which is this Eron's law. And so Eron's law, it's the inverse of Moore's law. And that's what organizations have to realize, is that technology is expanding exponentially, while the ability to adopt technology, organizations are growing logarithmically. And so the gap between what's possible from a technological point of view and what an organization can actually adopt is getting bigger and bigger. Mm. And so the importance of making the right choices of what technology to go after and what to not go after is becoming more and more difficult. And so that's a lot what we see, and where we try to answer the need of our clients is to help them realize, so what would be the technologies that I should focus on in 2024, knowing that I cannot afford to focus on everything. So let's try to pick those technologies that would give me the largest return in sense of business value, that would separate me the best, differentiate me the best from my competitor, that would create the most client preference or client customer preference or customer loyalty, things like that. So just dealing with the fact that you cannot do everything, it's just impossible. There's much more possible than you can afford to do. So when you think about where to put your bets, think about them carefully. Don't let yourself be blindfolded by the hype, but really choose wisely. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I think that's very, very wise advice, because I assume you could spend all day, every day talking to vendors about their technologies, and you could...
And the great thing is, on the PowerPoints of vendors, it always looks easy and it always works. Right?
I know. I've been through 4 CRM systems at this stage myself.
Exactly.
In the last 5 years, you know.
But then, of course, when the rubber meets the road, then you get all the all the that the reality sets in that you're not in a greenfield situation, that you have to integrate it with many of your existing systems, that you might not have this data culture yet. And then you get these fashionistas organizations that buy every technology that is available. But in the end, yes, they might create a little bit of growth, but at a very high cost. And so what you want is to move from being a fashionista to a digital master, as we call them, where you move at exactly the right rate in the technology axis and in this leadership axis. Being able to change your existing processes, etc., etc. Yeah.
Excellent. Can I ask you the one other thing that I see more and more these days, over the last year even in particular, is the amount of fraud activity that I'm seeing on, you know, by text, by email, the levels of fraud, you know, the efforts and sophistication of those frauds increasing rapidly. And while we champion data and we champion data democratization and everybody using data, there's also obviously, and AI, there's obviously inherent risks attached to these technologies. Where does an organization strike the balance between being innovative, embracing technology, but also managing risk?
That's a very big question. And
it's my speciality.
Yeah. And the simple answer would be it depends. It depends. It's very difficult to give a generic answer. The only thing you can say is that it will only become worse. That the tools that are becoming available are becoming so good that, for instance, even if you receive a call from your son or your daughter, you cannot trust basically that it's them, especially when they start to ask for money. Then you have to be very vigilant in messages and information that you receive in emails or in voice or probably even in video in the near future, that you cannot immediately trust as being true. The whole deep fake, and we wrote a whole book about deep fake, and the real answer is you have to be more vigilant. You cannot trust whatever you read or see or things.
But
it
can't stop us innovating. It can't stop us embracing technology. I assume we have to live with a certain level of risk.
Yeah, of course, the risk is also, of course, tied to probability that it actually happens, right? And so I would always, and then the other thing is with risk, you cannot prevent it from happening, but of course there's a probability if it's high or low, so that you can focus on those things that have a high probability. And then the real important thing, of course, is what do you do when the risk actually occurs? How do you respond? Do you have scenarios ready? Do you do just like you do a fire exercise in your office every so much time, every half year or so? You should also do exercises on how do I respond as an organization when a deep fake video occurs that shows that your product is fire dangerous or hurt somebody or whatever, and how do you respond when it's based on fake? Now, you should have a scenario in place where you actually already know how you're going to respond, so that you don't have to figure it out when the risk actually occurs.
Well, it's a great point. I mean, here in Ireland, our health services were affected very badly a couple of years ago, but from Russian cyber guys coming in, and you know, it's amazing how a whole country's health service can be held to ransom by a bunch of bad actors. It's phenomenal.
That's more in the security area. The problem is what you have in and for some reason hospitals are soft targets because in many cases, having access to your data and to your system is a matter of life and death.
Yeah.
You have these ransomware attacks. And so on the one hand, the consequences of not having access to become hostage of a ransom attack, the consequences are huge and immediate. And at the same time, you see that the attack surface has been growing tremendously because they have all these devices that often have not been designed from a security perspective. And they now become connected because it made somebody thought that it would make sense, but they are not hardened.
Yes.
And that's a real issue for healthcare companies, for other companies as well. So you have all these strategies, zero trust strategies, things like that, that you could implement, but that's not going to happen in itself, and it's not going to happen overnight, right?
And it's just as we're moving so fast and as people are getting more and more access to data, there's more and more points of weaknesses created as well.
Exactly.
We just have to be careful. I believe it can't stop us, but we do have to be mindful of these things. Finally, Mikhail, looking ahead, how do you see, which of the emerging technologies do you see having a massive impact over the next, say, 5-10 years, with your client organizations? Are we going to be fully AI? Is it going to be natural language processing? Is it going to be, what process automation? Where do you see us? Or is it mostly hype and we'll still recognize that the modern organization in 5-10 years' time, it'll be the same as now? Where do you see that?
All of the above. So let me give you a perspective how I think of it. So I believe that organizations are in these digital transformations for quite some time now. Mm-hmm. And I see a starting point for the digital transformation of many organizations somewhere around 1995, when mm-hmm. the internet became available to commercial organizations. Now, I think that this digital transformation will continue for at least the next 20 years. What's interesting is that the first phase, the first 20 years, from 95 to, let's say, 2015, the internet was driving transformation. The internet was the driving technology in different incarnations. So first it was the web, and then it became social, and then it became mobile. So you have different waves, but the internet in general was driving the transformation. And acceleration was the most important word. How can I give my customer what they want as fast and as convenient as possible? Now, I think in the next, so after 2015 to, let's say, 2035, or at least or beyond, it's no longer internet driving the transformation, it's AI. AI, I put it at least at the same level of internet technology, is as important. And the operative word is smartening. So it is still, acceleration will go on, because what's fast today will only be mediocre tomorrow and will be too slow to the day after tomorrow. But it's smartening. It's smartening of the acceleration, putting intelligence into everything you do as an organization, into every role, every business process will be enriched by smarting, by AI technologies, just like most processes have been enriched by internet technology in one way or the other. Now, why 2015 is the turning point? Because that's when computers became creative. They were able not only to spot existing patterns, but to create whole new patterns. And so what it basically says is that we're only scratching the surface of generative AI. In the next 10 years, we will see new waves coming every few years, just like we saw with internet technology, and it will make new transformations possible. It will make many new things possible. Now, The other thing is that we have to realize that whenever the interface changes of how people access data, access information, a revolution comes afterwards. So we saw that with MS-DOS in 1982, if you remember, that created the PC revolution.
Yeah,
we saw it with in 94 with Netscape publishing their internet browser and effectively creating the web. And then, of course, the whole internet revolution starting to happen. We saw it with the smartphone with Steve Jobs in 2007, right? With his smartphone, with his iPhone. And then the app revolution happened. And now what we see is that with ChatGPT, again, a whole new way of accessing information, and not only using natural language to prompt, but also getting a very specific answer directly instead of with search where you get 80 million results or 80 million hits. With ChatGPT, the power is, of course, that you get an exact answer, mostly true, sometimes not true, but we will figure that out. And so this will again trigger a new revolution. Now, the problem is with revolutions that it's very difficult to say what the essence of the revolution is before. You cannot predict it. If I had to predict what the essence of that revolution is, it's a data revolution. It is a data revolution where you cannot be smart if you don't have the data. And so what we will see in the next 10, 15 years is an enormous intensifying drive to think about data. How can we use it more better? How can we develop insights and wisdom from it in every business process that you can imagine? So now the focus is on call centers and making them more efficient, but that's only the start. This will be with us for the next 10, 15 years. And AI, generative or not, is driving that next transformation of organizations.
Thank you. It's great to finish on an optimistic note. So, Mikhail, listen, we're really honored to have you. Thank you very much. Really
thanks
enjoyed
for having me.
It was really interesting. You some great insights. Hope to catch you for a beer some stage if you're over in Dublin, and if not, I'm more than happy to join you for a beer in Holland at any stage, Mikhail. But listen, thank you very much. I hope people will understand a little bit more about the value that Sogeti brings to your client organizations, and we're very grateful for you spending some time with us today.
Absolutely. So it was a pleasure. Time goes fast when you're having fun. And I will take you up on this Guinness, because I love Guinness, but only in Dublin, because it doesn't travel well.
It doesn't travel too well, yeah. Well, that's what we tell everyone anyway, to make sure they come to Dublin.
All right.
Okay, thank you
looking
very much.
Yeah. To it.
Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to hear more from other data leaders, please subscribe below.